Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Christopher Davenport has supported independent tech news directly for 5 years. Be like Christopher. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS.
This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, February 21st, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From the shores of Lake Merritt, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And from a dark cloud that Tom sent my way, I'm the show's producer, Roger Chen.
Sadly, I didn't send it, but I did warn you that the dark cloud was coming. We got a little weather here. Yeah, there's always weather, right? That's the fate of the earth to always have weather. Mm-hmm. But we also got some good feedback from folks about Samsung, about Garmin. We got some news about VR and AR to get to. So let's jump right in with some tech things you should know.
Sources tell Reuters that Lyft will launch the roadshow for its initial public offering the week of March 18th, which would make it the first U.S. ride-hailing company to IPO. Now, Uber is expected to follow several weeks after. Those are the reports anyway. Lyft also announced its most affordable ride option called Shared Saver in Denver, Colorado, and San Jose.
YouTube says it has terminated more than 400 channels, disabled comments on tens of millions of videos, and reported illegal content to authorities for violations of its policies. Nestle Companies, AT&T, Epic Games, and Germany's Dr. August Oetker KG Food Company have all paused advertisements on YouTube over concerns about appearing alongside videos shared by pedophiles. A source told Ars Technica that Disney has also paused YouTube advertising for the same reason.
AT&T just restarted ads on YouTube after the last controversy about terrorism a couple years ago. Just for those of you keeping score, Gartner released its Q4 smartphone market numbers. Samsung and Apple declined, but they stayed first and second, respectively. Huawei and Oppo both rose. They make up third and fourth. And Xiaomi, who dropped to fifth, had essentially flat market share. So that's where they stand.
Just wanted to give that one a minute. Finland's Barjo has launched its VR1 headset, which promises more than 60 pixels. Pickles would be cool, though.
Much
pixels
better.
Per degree of resolution equivalent to the human eye. Interesting. The device will be sold to companies in industries like engineering and construction for $6,000 per device. So you better really want it.
Reggie Fils-Aimé announced that he is retiring as president of Nintendo America in order to level up to spending more time with his wife, family, and friends. Doug Bowser will take over as president on April 15th. Bowser previously led sales and marketing for the Switch, and before he was not, contrary to what you might think, the king of the Koopas. That indeed, friends, is a different Bowser.
Your president's in another castle. No, wait, that's Princess. Never mind.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what Nintendo does.
No truth to the rumors that Sony is elevating George Crash Bandicoot to its lead executive in a joke that I stole from Twitter.
Excellent. All right, let's talk a little bit more about virtual reality. We heard about that $6,000 set that Sarah was just talking about. What do we got coming from HTC?
Well, HTC announced the Vive Focus Plus that includes eye tracking and a pair of its updated motion controllers the company first announced as developer hardware back in October. You might have recalled that. The Vive Focus's original single controller supported 3 degrees of freedom, and these new controllers support 6, so they can be tracked as they move around as well as rotating on the spot. So this puts HTC in pretty direct competition with Oculus's Quest, which is a standalone headset with two controllers that are due this spring. The Vive Focus Plus is aimed primarily at business customers and will be available in 25 countries, including the US, Canada, the UK, Australia, Japan, and China, though we don't have word on pricing just yet.
So it seems like we're getting a lot, and we're going to get even more of it a little bit later, but VR seems to be moving into the enterprise market, mostly because enterprise customers pay a lot of money.
And also, these are proving useful in enterprise situations. Just talking about the headsets here, right?
Yeah.
The Varjo headset that's $6,000, they're selling it to engineering and construction. HTC, on the other hand, still wants gamers to buy their headset, but they're also saying, well, we seem to be selling them really well to people who want to use them in business situations. So that kind of factory floor mentality seems to be a very attractive to HTC as well. And they're sort of trying to ride the fence. Like, the Vive Focus Plus is available to everyone. The Varjo, you pretty much have to be an industrial customer to get one.
Yeah.
The HTC Vive Focus Plus, they'll take your money no matter who you are, but they also would like to take your money, especially if you're a business.
Well, and you know, every time we report on a headset where I'm like, okay, who needs this? Seems expensive. Seems cumbersome to wear. We get lots of feedback from people saying, the industry that I work in, this is how it's actually super helpful. So it reminds us that the enterprise and the business customers are actually really needing technology like this, where it might be just a fun hobby for the average consumer. For certain businesses, it's actually, you know, adding to the bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, I am all long ringing the clarion bell of, hey, a product is not a failure if it isn't a success with consumers. It may find another success. You could say it's a failure with consumers, but a lot of these new technologies, when you're like, what are they good for? If they're not good for me and my house, leaves out something that may end up making them very successful in the workplace. And then that circles back around later to being useful for the consumer once people start using them and figuring out what they're good for. For example, Microsoft announced new augmented reality apps for Android and iOS. Remote Assist, which is in preview for Android, mimics a HoloLens app that lets service engineers show what they see to a remote expert that can provide guidance. You just don't need a HoloLens to do it. You point your Android device at it. There's an iOS app in preview called Product Visualize, which lets salespeople show customers products in context, like how big a machine is or whether equipment fits in the space on your factory floor. This is similar to a HoloLens app called Layout, and an Android version of this may follow. Now, Ars Technica points out, isn't it interesting that the Android app is for the engineers and technicians, and the iOS app is for the salespeople trying to sell you the piece of equipment? Both apps integrate with Microsoft's enterprise resource planning and customer relationship management platform, Dynamics 365. This is Microsoft saying, we do think HoloLens is very good for the industrial workplace, for the business workplace, and we want more people to understand, even before we start selling HoloLens in the mass market, what it's good for.
Which is going to be when, by the way? HoloLens.
Well, we're getting a HoloLens announcement at Mobile World Congress, so maybe we'll find out soon.
Maybe we'll find out eventually after, you know, 3 years after it popped up as a thing that I could use in my Skype. you know, HoloLens will now be available to somebody. I'm not here to say that HoloLens is either a success or a failure before we have seen it. Certainly, compared to the expectations that some might have had from when it was first being talked about, I don't think it has quite exceeded what people initially might have thought of it. But that being said, I do want to give you just a little bit of guff, Tom, with your the enterprise. Nothing's a failure as long as you sell one copy at three times the price.
It has to be more
really
than one.
I don't really think he said that.
Oh, no. Google Glass. No, not a failure. Certainly not a company-defining failure. It's instead something that now lives on beautifully. Oh, look at that. Look at that beautiful piece of hardware for all of our video viewers. Ah, oh, geez.
Justin, is calling something a failure just because it isn't sold to the consumer is inaccurate. That's all I'm saying.
It's a failure for consumers, which both of
these
products are actually aimed at.
That's fine. I don't know that VR headsets were, or even the HoloLens were aimed only at consumers.
I'm sorry. Those initial commercials we saw were definitely
only.
I said only.
I think we are
the enterprise app known as Minecraft. I'm sure
we are guilty of not being able to separate things and say, hey, maybe it's not good for this one thing that they wanted it to be good at, but it's good for this other thing. No, people just want to jump up and down on a device's grave and make fun of companies for being failures, and at the expense of noting that, like, actually, this is a pretty useful piece of technology.
Making fun of, I do make fun of Google Glass. All right, fine.
All right,
but
it is kind
other
of stupid.
Other than that, I do think that it is not inaccurate to say when something that fails on a consumer level fails on a consumer level.
Well, also Google Glass gets a bad rap, right? Because it was the first of its time, at least for consumers. And you got a lot of stories of people being like, went into a bar and had my Google Glass on, and people got weird and nobody really understands what this is for. I think over time, as we've seen Google Glass competitors and successors come on the market, we talk about them all the time on the show, and as there is more enterprise examples of, oh, this is actually super helpful for this particular business that most people don't work in, so they don't realize it, then it becomes less of a joke. I mean, it's not a joke. It just, it wasn't the end-all be-all for VR.
It hilariously under-delivered on its initial promise.
Yeah, and what bothers me...
Go back and watch that video, and go watch the HoloLens video, and then we'll see what HoloLens is when it does officially kind of come out. I know what Google Glass was, because I bought one. It was a hilarious... underdeliver, and that to me is the legacy of it.
What I think is ignored in that perspective, and what I think bothers me is not saying, hey, this failed to deliver on its promises. It's sort of the dancing up and down of like, and look how stupid Google is, and everything they do, and you shouldn't believe. And it's the conclusions that are drawn from that without taking into account that, hey, you know what? You try things, they don't always work, but sometimes you find another good use for them.
Of course. Well, speaking of things that will definitely work out perfectly fine, sources tell the Wall Street Journal that Apple and Goldman Sachs are working on a joint MasterCard credit card, which will integrate with the Apple Wallet app. It might include features like spending goals, reward tracking, and 2% cash back. Employees are supposedly testing the card with a public launch possible coming later this year. Apple would get a larger slice of each transaction with a credit card than it gets from an Apple Pay transaction.
Well, I mean, this is annoying in the sense that I love using Apple Pay because it's seamless, or more seamless anyway, than having to have a phone and a credit card at the ready. So, okay, if there's a better rate going on as an end user, sure, I'm interested. I know that the Apple Wallet app is also getting a big overhaul. There's a new version in the latest beta iOS, so there's probably something that we're going to hear at Apple's next announcement to this, unless it gets significantly delayed, because we heard about this originally about a year ago, a little under a year ago. I think it was last summer. So it does sound like Apple has been working with perhaps Goldman Sachs, perhaps other companies for something along these lines for some time. Is there anything we hate about this?
I don't hate anything particularly about this idea. I do worry. I'm worrying about where Apple is going, because they obviously have they're thinking about life after iPhone. That is no secret. They have made that clear in their earnings call. Not to say that iPhone sales are falling off a cliff or anything, but they are flattening or slowing in some cases, and that is a financial concern for them. They have not seen any of their other hardware up to and including watches and iPad Pros and HomePods really stand up and take the lead, or at least begin to replace what they are losing on the iPhone. So now they turn to services, and I don't know what the Apple brand is to me if I'm not enjoying their hardware. Contrary to the very easy Apple cult sort of criticism, I don't care about Apple if I don't like the devices. And I don't know if their track record with services is something that would be enough to get me in the door.
Listen, Apple PC sales are slowing down. No matter what Steve Jobs has done to prop them back up, they're not enough to make up the shortfall. And Apple getting into accessories like music players is not the Apple brand to me. Those are consumer devices. They're not a serious computer company anymore. And I think it's a bad move for Apple.
All right. That's unfair, and you know it.
I was like, there's something in Tom's tone that makes him sound like he's being facetious.
Perhaps
right now.
I was being a little overly sarcastic. I mean,
sassafras right now.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but compare this to something like an Amazon Prime credit card, which a lot of people use. If you're in the ecosystem enough, a little bit different. I know Amazon and Apple are apples and oranges, ha ha ha. But if you get enough sort of kickbacks on other services that you might want, such as Apple original content on a yet to be publicly announced television service, then I can see where this might become advantageous to somebody like me I'm pretty ingrained in the Apple ecosystem to this day.
Yeah. Oh, no. So am I. I don't think this is necessarily a bad idea. I just want more Apple products that I love.
Yeah. This is not the service idea that's going to fill that. I think that's a totally fair criticism. A television service, Apple Music, more services like that, maybe a transportation service, maybe there's some electric car that they're going to come out that you'll be able to call and rent because it's automatic. Those are the kind of services that start to feel like Apple. A credit card, you know, all sarcasm aside, Justin, you're right. It does not feel like Apple. It feels like something, my sports team or grocery store or gas station do. And yeah. that just doesn't fit somehow. I'm with you there. Microsoft's Edge browser has hidden whitelist to let approved domains run Flash, bypassing the security of click to play. Now, prior to February, that whitelist included just 58 domains, although they included several Microsoft sites. They also included some random sites like Deezer, Yahoo, QQ from China. Apparently a hairdresser in Spain was on this list. In November, Google Project Zero researcher Ivan Fratrick discovered a cross-site scripting vulnerability in the whitelist mechanism and noted that the whitelist was not limited to HTTPS, which would have allowed for a man-in-the-middle attack. So he responsibly disclosed to Microsoft. Microsoft has delivered a patch. In the patch notes, they listed the 58 domains. That's how we know the hairdresser was there. They also, in the patch, enforced HTTPS and reduced the whitelist to two domains, apps.facebook.com and www.facebook.com, only for Flash widgets larger than 298 by 298. Now, the initial assumption was, I guess maybe Facebook has a deal with Microsoft about their Flash games and they don't want them to be deprecated. But Facebook has said it asked Microsoft to remove those domains from the list. They're like, we don't want those whitelisted either. So we're still a little unclear why they didn't just get rid of the whitelist, but it might be for naught anyway, because Adobe's sunsetting Flash in 2020. Microsoft is moving to the Chromium engine for Edge, and Chromium has already deprecated Flash and will eliminate it soon. So this all may be a tempest in a teapot, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, the researcher, the Google researcher who originally figured this out last year was like, yeah, there's no real rhyme or reason that I can figure out as to why these 58 domains and subdomains are part of this list.
Yeah.
And it's even weirder that after this was disclosed and Microsoft went ahead and got rid of pretty much everything but a couple of Facebook domains, Facebook was like, we don't know why they're still there. We've specifically asked them to remove those as well. So somebody knows what's going on here. But yeah, maybe whatever the story is, isn't going to be relevant much longer.
Yeah. One quick note on this. I feel like there is a great either long magazine piece or a book to be written just about the long, curious history of Flash. Like Flash seems to have found itself in the middle of just these weird public, sometimes tribal firefights for something that would oddly not really you would not think would come from something like a protocol or like Flash.
It will be called More Than a Flash in the Pan.
nailed it.
Well, I took a couple of Flash classes back in the day, and I didn't get it at all. It was horrible. So RIP Flash. We never knew ya. A new t-shirt called Wear TRBL. How do we think this wants to be pronounced?
Tribal,
everyone?
Right? Wear Tribal.
Wear Tribal. Okay, so it's sort of like We're Tribal, but Wear, W-E-A-R.
Yeah,
Wear,
yeah. Wear,
yeah, Wear Tribal has, it's kind of interesting, a flexible e-ink display embeddable into a t-shirt itself. So along with a mobile app and Bluetooth low energy, you can store up to 20 images on the display to fit your mood. And there's a battery that lasts about 4 days. So not that you should wear a shirt for 4 days in a row. I don't know. I don't, you know, don't want to be judgy, but you could technically have a different shirt for 4 days without having to charge the shirt again. You can also remove the display and add it to another shirt or sweatshirt that is compatible, of course. The product began as a subsidiary of drone company Parrots. Well, that's kind of weird, but okay. And was spun off in July of 2018. So Wear Tribal also wants to create a community, of course, wants to be a social network with a curated library of pictures that wearers can browse, download to their t-shirts, and get followers, broadcast content to other users. And mostly this is sort of a silly fashion thing, but if it looks nice, I would be into it because I am very pro t-shirt and there's only so many t-shirts I want to buy. So if I can make a t-shirt for four different shirts, well, I mean, endless different shirts, but several different shirts while still on a single charge, I would do it.
Yeah, this is an interesting idea. I think we are certainly going to see more of it in kind of a related story. During NBA All-Star Weekend, Commissioner Adam Silver debuted a jersey that could change. He demonstrated it via app, changing from a Seth Curry jersey to a Michael Jordan jersey. Nobody seemed to pick up in all the stories that I found that this is almost certainly going to be ad tech, where they could sell a jersey ads on a rotating basis. But I think that this is certainly something that we're just going to see more and more going forward.
Yeah, here's an example of e-ink screens, which everyone thought, okay, I guess they're good for signage in stores and e-readers, right? Finding another use, because this French company really worked hard on figuring out how to make them comfortable. You still don't want to wash them, but make them comfortable to be embedded in the shirt, and you could wear it as if you just have a t-shirt with a print on it, but you get to change it. You get to whatever the funny meme of the day can be on your t-shirt, and we're always hearing people like saying we want to hear more about new technologies and new uses for technologies. I think this is a great example of that.
Absolutely.
Well, and as podcast producers, right, it's like, I don't know, somebody loves a DTNS episode and it's like, you know what, I'm wearing that shirt tomorrow. Well, you can kind of have a rotating basis of things that you support and like, or you can offend folks with whatever you want to put on your t-shirt, which I also support.
Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines. You can find it at dailytechheadlines.com.
Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Also, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. We also hang out with the amateur traveler Chris Christensen about every week or so. And this week, he's bringing us some interesting news on cameras on planes.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. There was an interesting controversy that was created by Singapore Airlines somewhat unintentionally when their passengers noticed that their new entertainment systems, these are the ones on the back of the seat in front of you, had cameras. And so people were wondering, is Singapore trying to take pictures of us while we are in our seat? Now, granted, if you took a picture of me while I was flying on a long flight, all you would be getting is me snoring and drooling. You could see why people might be concerned. Singapore says they have no intention to use that camera, but it's built into their new system by the original equipment manufacturer. It does beg the question of, who is it there for? Is there some other airline that is using the camera? And what the heck would you use that camera for in the first place? I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
This is just like the Google mic story, right? It's a part that had the thing, and they're like, I don't know. We want to use that part. it would be more expensive to order a different part that didn't have the camera because this one does the thing we want. So just don't use the camera and put it in there. And then everyone noticed, like, hey, wait, why is there a camera? I mean, this happens a lot where you order a thing to use it for one thing and it has this other stuff built in that you're like, well, I'm not even going to use that. And I think that's probably what happened to Singapore Airlines here.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
It would still make me feel super paranoid.
I mean, what do you do, though, if you're like, okay, we don't want to spend the extra money to remove the cameras.
And
a different OEM display doesn't do what we need it to do. So we're going to buy this. Do you put pieces of tape over it? Just like,
put a sticker.
I think you probably do.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that, Roger. I like that. Put a Singapore Airlines logo right over that camera so that it just can't be used. I think that's an elegant solution. Right there.
Singapore Airlines, pay me.
I was going to tell them to take it, but no, you should charge them for it.
Well, no, you let people have the selfie cam and let them put, like, you know, AR dog ears on.
You can make it a removable sticker if they want.
Make it a game. No one will care anymore.
Everyone will freak out. You know, what's the number one thing that all passengers want? Happy, content, and distracted children who won't yell, scream, and cause a commotion on a long flight. If that means that they get to have robot eyes, looking into the back of the headrest, then I think we would all be richer for that experience.
All right. Speaking of being richer for experiences, we're richer for your experiences. Thanks to everybody who shares their actual expertise with us, like today. Let's check out the mailbag.
We got a few emails from Garmin fans out there supporting what we said yesterday about why Garmin's business is booming and why it wasn't so much of a surprise. So first one comes from Nick from waterlogged Huntington, West Virginia, who says, while Google Maps and Apple Maps have taken over a majority of my navigation duties, there's still some trips where I wouldn't leave the house without our Garmin. We've taken a cross-country RV trip with my in-laws and their 20-foot Class C, the ones with the bed over the cab type thing, big deal. We ran into quite a few places where my smartphone just shrugged shoulders at me and said, no signal. But the Garmin kept navigating away. Google does allow you to download offline maps, but while that's convenient for your normal commute, it's hard to keep up when you're really traveling. Also, Garmin makes standalone GPS units designed for recreational and commercial vehicles that allow users to enter their vehicle dimensions. If you've ever had fun watching the videos on 11foot8.com, you'll understand why this can be very important. Even if you see the warning signs and don't run into the low clearance, it can be very difficult to turn a large vehicle, especially when you can't back up because you're towing a car.
Yeah, we got a few enthusiasts who wrote in with similar sentiments. And then among the many pilots who wrote in, Stephen said, as someone from the Kansas City area, I have witnessed the continuous rapid growth of Garmin. And as a pilot, I want to let people know that they have always been the big dog in aviation and maritime navigation. And in fact, in our Discord, people were like praising.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Seeing the aviation stuff they've been doing lately, saying it's really good. So good on you, Garmin. And I apologize once again for back in 2007, 2008, undervaluing that side of Garmin's business. Mea culpa.
Had a big mailbag over the last 24 hours, so thanks to everybody. In response to the Samsung announcements from yesterday, Mark wrote in, among some of the people who think the ability to wirelessly charge devices off of the S10 sounds promising, he writes. Being able to charge another device means carrying less chargers and or cables. Makes it easy to charge those new AirPods at the same time as charging your phone, or when outlets are sparse, charging two phones at once when traveling with others. Maybe this is more likely of a use case than draining your phone to charge another device, at least for me.
Yeah, very nice.
I'm with you with that one, Mark. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well.
Thanks to everybody who gives us feedback, everyday feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. And also thanks to Justin Robert Young for being with us in person this fine Thursday. Justin, let folks know where they can keep up with all the latest.
Well, here is the latest. March 9th in Austin, Texas. I know there's a lot of tech folks that are going to be down there in South by Southwest Interactive that Saturday. It's a daytime show beginning at doors are at 2, and we're going to start as close to 2 as possible, to be totally honest with you. And rolling on for a couple hours is going to be the South by So Wasted show that will feature not only a live recording of the Night Attack podcast, a live recording of the Ice Cream Social podcast, but also special guests, including Tom Merritt, who is going to be a part of the program. You can get tickets by heading on over to podcastlink.com/nightattack. And here's a fun little trick. If you have iOS, then just literally pause the podcast right now, trigger Siri, and say podcastlink.com/nightattack. Just try it. It's going to bring you right to our ticket site where you can go ahead and purchase your way in. Again, that is March 9th, Austin, Texas, at the North Door, right off 6th Street for South by So Wasted.
Holy crap, it actually worked. I did it.
Yeah.
That's pretty great. Well, thank you, Justin Robert Young. I'm looking forward to being in Austin again in March. And folks, don't forget that the reason we are able to do this show, the people we are accountable to on this show are you. And if you want your voice to be heard the loudest, the best way to support us is to become a member at patreon.com/DTNS. You'll get an ad-free RSS feed that you can put into your podcatcher. You get special episodes from me, special perspectives from Sarah. She lives with gadgets. And today, you got a column from Roger Chang about the fear of a Huawei planet. This is essential reading. You need to read this today, because tomorrow we're going to be talking to Eric Olander about the general tech scene in China. So these pair quite nicely. Go become a member. Get the column at patreon.com/DTNS.
I mentioned we'd love your feedback, and I'll mention it again. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com is where to send those emails. Thank you in advance. We love to hear your perspectives. You make us smarter every day. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow, we're talking to Eric Olander and Len Peralta into Illustrate. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation. Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.